This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Clean air is a basic human right, but a lot of people are deprived of it. Two-thirds of the cities in the world with adequate air quality data are suffering from dangerous levels of pollution, and this is having a significant impact on human health. So how exactly is it impacting us, and what can be done about it? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Karine Leger. She's the director of Air Paris, the Air Pollution Monitoring Network for the Paris region. Welcome, Karine, how are you today?
And welcome. I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Lovely to have you here. So, as I mentioned, you're the director of Air Paris. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Could you tell me about the work that you do through the organization?
The organization is an independent NGO in charge of monitoring air pollution, informing the citizens, but also advising the local authorities. Mm-hmm. We are 14 years old, and the monitoring in France is done by independent NGO. Mm-hmm. Because we think it's important to be independent and to provide transparent and reliable data. And our organization is also a bit special because we have around the table in our administration board all the stakeholders. We have the state, we have the local authorities, we have the industries, and we have other environmental and consumer protection NGOs. Mm-hmm. And this is meant to have around the table all the people concerned by air pollution, either because they emit the pollutant into the atmosphere, because they have to deal with it, that's the local authority and the state, or because they breathe it, and that's representative of the environmental NGOs.
Okay, so do you sort of bring everybody together to discuss these things? You know, what is the role that you play in all of this?
We have as a role to monitor air pollution, the different pollutants, not only the mandatory pollutants, but also we are looking for emerging issues like ultrafine particles, pesticides. We also want to be able to have a look of what are going to be the next issue regarding air pollution, not only the mandatory pollutants. Mm-hmm. We also provide diagnosis for the local authorities with their mitigation plan, and we make the impact assessment of this mitigation plan. We are making the forecast of air pollution, especially in case of pollution episodes. Mm-hmm. And we provide communication tools to the citizens, to the media, to better understand air pollution, what it is exactly, and to raise awareness.
Right, so anything to do with air pollution, you're basically the go-to people for it in Paris.
Yes, almost.
Okay, all right, but let's talk about the pollution in Paris. I mean, I know at one point it was very, very polluted and there was a lot of action taken to sort of curb this. I mean, talk to me about that. You know, how did you counter that?
In Paris, but I think it's the case in most of the cities in Europe, thanks to the European regulation, the situation has been improved a lot.
Okay.
There are pollutants for which we solved the situation, like the sulfur dioxide, it's related with industries. Lead, when we banned the leaded fuels, we resolved the problem with lead. Mm-hmm. The improvement of vehicles have improved also the situation. The new vehicles are less polluting than old vehicles. Euro norms are not perfect, but it's still better than nothing. So it's all of this brought a very big improvement in air pollution. However, air pollution is still not satisfactory for five pollutants, and for two of them, we do have a court case with the European Commission because we do not respect the European regulation.
Well, could you talk about that? I mean, what is it that you don't agree on?
The European Commission has regulation for all the member states. Mm-hmm. There are regulation on the emission. They have regulation on the air pollution you breathe, limit values, and that all the member states have to fulfill. But for a city as large as Paris, or the Paris agglomeration with 10 million inhabitants, with a density which is almost the same as some Asian cities, mm-hmm. with a very high density of traffic, it's quite complicated to reach those limit values. And we do not respect those limit values for two pollutants. Mm-hmm. It's nitrogen dioxide. It's related with the traffic and with heating systems.
Okay.
And it's also for particles.
Okay, all right. And I think, you know, when people talk about air pollution at the moment, they're generally thinking about traffic-related pollution, but it's so much more broader than that, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's why it's so complicated. Traffic, everywhere in large city, traffic is part of the problem. Mm. But depending on the situation, you may have additional sources. Heating system, not here in Malaysia, but in France, heating system is an issue in the winter. You may also have agriculture, and you may also have very specific conditions like haze for you, which we do not have in Paris.
Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about heating also, you're talking about the burning of wood as well, isn't it? That's also...
Burning, it's developed for climate change, but it's a problem for air pollution. That's why we think it's important to handle the both issue together, climate change and air pollution, because sometimes we may end up with solutions that are maybe good for climate change, like wood burning for heating systems or diesel cars for the traffic. Mm-hmm. But those solutions are certainly not good for air pollution, and you really need to have a look at the both issue to make sure that you don't have adverse effect when you take one decision.
Right. There's no one simple answer, basically, right?
No.
Okay. So talking about air pollution caused by petrol, diesel, I know that in 2017, France announced that it would actually end the sale of both diesel and petrol-powered vehicles by 2040 as part of its plans to, of course, meet the ambitious targets set out under the Paris Climate Accord. How is that going? Is that still in the pipeline?
It's in the pipeline. And the purpose of this is also to help develop new mobility mode, like bicycle, like electric cars, make sure that with this ban, new technology are emerging to have mobility which is less polluting, not only for climate change, but also for air pollutants. And the mayor of Paris wants to have it even earlier than that. It's a ban which is announced, but it also put a lot of pressure from the communication point of view. And now when the people have to change their car in Paris, they also think about this ban that may come. And they also think about the low emission zone which is in place. Mm. And when they have to renew the car, they think differently. They try to take it into account.
Mm-hmm. So, but you know, when you do put sort of policies like this in place, you do, of course, have to make sure that your public transportation is... you know, perfect, I would say, right? That because obviously people need to get to the cities regardless of whatever bans are in place. So how have you sort of mitigated those sorts of situations?
The case of Paris is a bit specific because the density of public transport is very important. Buses, metro, it's very, very important. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Parisians, they don't have a car. It's expensive. It's difficult to park it. And there are so many public transport, even if they're packed, that you can basically move around the city without having a car. The situation is much more difficult for the suburban area where the density of the public transport is not that important. Yeah. But when you look at the air pollution issue, Paris is rather small. You have to handle the whole agglomeration of Paris. And then the question of public transport becomes more important. Because the people they have to move to go to work.
To work, yeah.
And that's also why they are developing further public transport to take it into account. And they are also developing a financial support for the poorest citizens to help them change their car into something which is cleaner.
Oh, I see. So there's more incentives or there's some something that's given to them to subsidies.
Yes. Depending on the revenue to help the poorest citizens to change their car to make
Wonderful.
Sure that this environmental issue is not becoming also a social issue.
Okay, so that's a policy that's already in place.
That's a policy which is already in place for the city of Paris, for the metropolitan area. And in addition to that, there are also subsidies from the national government.
So. That's wonderful. That's something we need to take into account as well. I mean, using the carrot and stick analogy, I mean, discouraging drivers from bringing dirtier vehicles into city centres. So that's arguably the stick, am I correct? Are there any policy carrots when it comes to air pollution besides the one that you just mentioned?
There are different kinds of policies. There are policies to reduce the air pollution you breathe every day. Mm. And for this, you have the low emission zone. In Paris, there is a ban along the Seine River of the highway. There was a highway crossing the cities. The mayor of Paris tends to decrease the volume of cars inside of Paris by developing bus lines, cycling lines, alternative modes like bicycles, electric vehicles. All of this is meant to change the way you move inside of the city. Mm-hmm. And there are additional measures, which are emergency measures in case of pollution episodes. It's only a few days a year, but it's aimed at reducing the intensity of the peak. Mm-hmm. It won't solve the problem on a daily basis, but it's aimed at reducing the intensity of a pollution episode.
Okay, so I mean, you've been doing this for, Air Perif has been around for 14 years, as you said, but you've been working in this line for 18 years, if I'm not mistaken. Have you seen a marked improvement in all these years that you've been working in this line?
The air pollution is improving at the level of the European cities,
okay,
thanks to the European directive. However, the perception of the people is that air pollution is really bad, and it's that the air pollution is developing. So the tendency, the trends regarding air pollutant is different from the perception of the people.
I see.
But which means that they are also more aware of air pollution. There are more action being taken, especially by the local authorities, like the low emission zone in Paris. It's the first low emission zone in the municipality in France.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Europe, there are more than 200 of them already in place.
Okay.
But it means that there are changes towards to help have better air quality. Whereas in the past, the first concern was climate change, and most of the mitigation measures were dedicated to climate change, and sometimes with adverse effect, like for diesel car and with wood burning, it was an adverse effect on air pollution. But I think it's also an international context where air pollution is really an issue for all the large cities, even if the trends are different. In Paris, it's improving. It's not satisfactory, but it's improving. In other large cities, the air pollution may still increase.
Mm-hmm.
So the trends are different, but the perception across the world of the citizen is the same, is that air pollution is bad and that you have to do something. But the question is, you have to do something, but usually you prefer that your neighbor abandon its car than you. It's hard for the citizen to get rid of their habits. Sometimes because it's very strong habits. Sometimes it's also because they have no alternative like public transport. But still, when you are looking at air pollution, it's something very sensitive because it's also very much related with your daily habits, with your behavior, and it's sometimes very hard to change.
I'm speaking today to Karine Leger. She is the director of Air Perif, which is an air pollution monitoring network for the Paris region, and we are discussing air pollution. Karine is here visiting Southeast Asia. I think you're visiting a few countries during your stay here, am I correct?
Yeah, sure. I will go to Bangkok and I will also go to Hanoi before the end of the week.
Okay, and I know that, of course, you're working in Paris, but like you were saying before, this is an international problem, especially in bigger cities. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about the health impacts of this air pollution. I mean, through your years of work in this, I'm sure you've read all the scientific papers about it. Maybe you could just help explain what are some of those adverse effects.
For the World Health Organization, air pollution is the first environmental concern. The World Health Organization estimates that about 8 million people are dying every year because of air pollution,
mm-hmm.
both indoor air pollution and outdoor air pollution. Most of the effects are related to respiratory disease and cardiovascular disease. And each pollutant, among the pollutants that are mandatory to monitor and that are regulated, they are regulated because they have effect on health, and the effect might be quite different depending on the pollutants. For instance, when you look at the particle, when they are very small, they can go very deep into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Like the particles are smaller than 10 micrograms per cubic meter, what we call PM10. They are not stopped by your nose and they can go into your respiratory system. When you look at particles even smaller that are called PM2.5, smaller than 2.5 micrometers, they can even go into your blood and act on the cardiovascular system.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're also raising questions with nanotechnologies, with diesel car regarding ultrafine particles. And those particles can be as small as a DNA molecule. And you can imagine that they can go very deep into your body. So the knowledge regarding the impact on air pollution on health is developing. There are already plenty of evidence regarding the impact of PM10, PM2.5, nitrogen dioxide, ozone, and that's why they are regulated. But pollution is developing. What about pesticides, ultrafine particles? There are more evidence about the impact of those, let's say, new pollutants on health, regarding the impact on the baby, regarding the impact on mental health. There are also new evidence of, let's say, new impact of those pollutants on health.
So it's okay. So we can. It's still emerging, I suppose. It's still being studied, as you said, right? But who do you think are more at risk in terms of social status? Do you think that is also a factor that comes into play in all of this?
The people the most at risk is children, because their respiratory system is developing until the age of 8. So it's very sensitive population. Mm-hmm. The women which are pregnant are also very sensitive people. The people that have already cardiovascular or respiratory system or elderly are also very sensitive. Okay. And then when you look at the population, usually the poorest population are also the population that are living in the situation where the level of pollution are the highest, because they are living in areas where there is a lot of traffic, where there might be industries, and they are exposed to highest level of air pollution.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, is it accepted that air pollution is a cause of, let's say, very chronic, like lung disease, for example, or, you know, all sorts of these health impacts that we were talking about earlier? Is it accepted widely that these are the causes, that air pollution is the cause of it?
I couldn't tell. I know that even among the doctors, this question of air pollution is developing. And in the past, they didn't really pay attention to the level of air pollution.
Right.
And they pay more and more attention of disease that might be related to air pollution. Mm-hmm. It's also something developing, but I couldn't really tell. It's not my expertise.
Okay. All right. I mean, the only reason I ask is because, you know, I'm sure you heard that we, Malaysia and, you know, many of the countries here in Southeast Asia, we suffered from the effects of the haze very recently, of course, you know, the result of the open burning, you know, and a lot of us, we had adverse health reactions to it, right? You know, shortness of breathing and all of that. But of course, to say that it was caused by the haze, there was no way of directly linking it. And there's no way of holding anyone accountable for, let's say, a death related to the haze.
Yes and no. In France, for instance, but it also exists in other countries. That's how we came with evidence of the impact of air pollution and health. They make what we call epidemiological studies, and where they are able to make the link between an increase of air pollution and an increase of death, or an increase of people going to hospital for emergency for certain disease, very typical disease like respiratory disease or cardiovascular disease. They are able to really make the link between this level of pollution, this increase of level of pollution, and this impact on health. It's statistic studies. And for instance, it's how they came up with the results that the pollution episodes, the grid smoke in London in 1956, it killed 4,000 people. Because they were really able to make the link between the level of sulfur dioxide on particles and the number of deaths at this very specific period.
I see. So it has been, so it can be proven. And it
it can be proved. And that's also how the World Health Organization makes its recommendation. It's very much related with the impact of health of certain pollutants.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, just talking about the haze again, you know, here we do have a regional mechanism in place to address the haze. So it's in the form of the ASEAN Agreement of Transboundary Haze Pollution. So this was signed back in 2002 between Indonesia, Singapore and Malaysia. But based on what we've seen in this couple of years, the haze keeps happening, you know, and it hasn't actually been very effective. I don't know if you have been following this or whether you have any thoughts about how this is playing out as well.
We have a lot of pollution, but we don't have haze. However, we still have some pollution episodes that can come from transboundary conditions. For instance, for ozone on particles, under very specific meteorological conditions, we get ozone or particles from our neighbors. In addition to that, we produce our own ozone on particles and we send it also to our neighbors. But that's under very specific meteorological conditions. Regarding the daily air pollution, there are regulations taken at the scale of the European Commission for all the member states that all the member states have to fulfill. They have to respect a certain amount of emission into the atmosphere. It's national emission settings. There are regulations in place on industries, euro norms to limit the emission of pollutants. And in addition to that, the member states, they have to respect norms of air quality.
Okay.
And that's meant to reduce the burden of air pollution on a daily basis and to limit the transfer of pollution from one country to another one.
Okay. Well, here in Malaysia, you know, some professionals actually proposed suing the Indonesian government. So their proposal was that Malaysia initiates a lawsuit against Indonesia in the International Court of Justice for a symbolic value of just one ringgit as a legally binding sort of perpetual commitment to prevent future forest fires. I mean, their rationale, of course, was that the Indonesian government retains the sovereignty, the political, technical and legal capabilities to fight these fires. So the lawsuit would thus sort of impose legal responsibility upon the government. Do you think that might work, since it seems like nothing else seems to be working?
They may put pressure on the international level on Indonesia, also in terms of, let's say, the image of the country, because behind that, there are also questions of attractivity, also for tourism, for economical purposes. And it's some sort of, it will bring some bad publicity for the country that could put some pressure on it. But maybe the solution can also come from the pressure of the citizens themselves in Indonesia, because I guess if there are impact on health here in Malaysia, the impact must be even stronger on people in Indonesia.
Yes.
So they may also, their awareness may raise as well, and they may also put pressure on their own government to change it.
Okay. So, I mean, what else are you working on, you know, especially in Paris, but you also are doing work both regionally and globally. I mean, tell me a bit more about what you're working on, you know, in the coming years.
Air pollution and apocalypse is really a challenge all the cities are facing with. In France, we have expertise, but we have a way of looking at air pollution, which is coming from the European Commission. And we think it's very important to look also at what's happening in other countries, like in China, like in the States, like here in Southeast Asia, because there might be solutions in terms of air pollution improvement or in terms of monitoring that are interesting. And we're also looking at a network of cities sharing expertise, sharing knowledge, but also being a reference in terms of air pollution data that can be used by the citizen to make comparison, that can be used by NGOs, really as a reference, because there are more and more information provided by company, by NGOs, by international organization, and sometimes it's hard for the citizens to figure out and to understand these different figures.
So when you're here, as I asked you earlier, you know, you are here in Southeast Asia to also foster these dialogues as well?
Yes, we are looking for cooperation, exchange of expertise. We have partnership, for instance, with Hanoi. We help to have a look at the monitoring network to see how it could be improved. Based on the local concern, that the kind of work we also have with Beijing, where there was also an issue of public information, how to make a forecast, but also how to handle new technology like microsensors they are developing, but how can we use them as a monitoring network? Are they reliable enough? That the kind of expertise we like to share with our counterpart in large cities.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Karine Leger. She's the director of Air Paris, which is an air pollution monitoring network for the Paris region. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, which is available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.